Everyone says that homeschooling is a lifestyle, not just an educational choice. If so, then why are we surprised when it affects our marriage? Find out how wives can have something left for their husbands by the end of the day, and husbands can understand the burdens their wives face. Let's make sure homeschooling makes our marriage stronger. This is Hal and Melanie Young with their workshop, How to Be Happily Married While Homeschooling.
When we first got into homeschool leadership, we didn't really think that marriage had much to do with homeschooling.
Right.
But then we found out that homeschooling had a lot to do with marriage and that it impacted your marriage. And so we began to put together this workshop, Homeschooling and Marital Bliss, How to Have Both.
Right, because we found it is possible. And some people may be sitting there thinking, I'm not so sure about that. But we're going to talk about some things that we kind of turned up along the way and wish somebody had told us about, and maybe some ideas on how to grapple with these things. You know, I won't say to avoid them. Some of them are not things to avoid. You know, the thing about homeschooling, and I think we did hear this, and you still hear this in different places, that homeschooling is a big lifestyle change. You know, it's not just a matter of I'm taking my child out of this school here and putting him in this school here, which just happens to be at home. It's not as simple as changing schools.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, I remember years ago, someone used to pass around a mimeograph, where I'm showing my age, essay about how having a child changes your life.
Yes.
And it talked about how when you have a baby, all your perspectives change. It's like the scenery changes in your world.
That's true. And like marriage is that way.
I remember you mentioned that at the time when you read it. You said, mm-hmm. Marriage was the same way for me. And when we got married, it changed so many things. It changed my whole perspective.
And the important thing is, it should.
It ought to. And it's good.
And you ought to embrace these things and not rail against them and fight them, but recognize that there are changes.
And that's kind of what we didn't expect about homeschooling, because you decide to homeschool and you think it's about spelling and math, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you discover it's also about auto repair and
right.
finances. And discipleship, because when you decide to take the very great leap of educating your own children, it's like suddenly the scales fall from your eyes,
mm-hmm.
and you realize all the other things you ought to be teaching your child. You know,
right.
that, I don't know, do people think that the schools teach about car maintenance and how to work on your house? I think they must, because very few of them teach the children how to do it. And yet, when you decide to homeschool, often you decide, wow, I'm going to have to teach them how to manage money. I'm going to have to teach them how to change a faucet out. I'm going to have to teach them how to change the oil in the car. And it's true. And so it begins to impact your whole life.
True.
You used to go on vacations. Now you go on vacations and
They're just extended field trips is what they are.
Yeah, you're sure to take your bird guides and your fish and wildlife guides. And when you're walking along the beach, I remember walking along the beach in Pawleys Island, South Carolina, and seeing this little purple shell, and I thought, boy, that's really pretty, and I grabbed it, and I pulled on it, and it pulled back, and I kept pulling, and it was a huge conch shell about that big with the creature still in it.
Yeah.
Man, instant science lesson. Let's dissect this thing, folks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, how was your vacation this year?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, realizing that when you become a home educator, you've taken on another full-time job. Honest to goodness. And what's more, you have engaged in a spiritual battle. And that's something which I think, you know, people don't really warn you about.
No, because, see, our enemy does not want us discipling our children. Our enemy does not want us creating warriors against him.
No. And
so,
he opposes us.
So
you will have trials and testing associated with your decision to be a homeschooler. And we also find that it challenges relationships. Now, I was talking with a mother during the break, and I confess that my mom was a career public school teacher, and my grandmother was a career public school teacher, and my sister is a public school teacher who's on sabbatical right now.
And your mother was not thrilled we were going to homeschool.
But that's not the kind of relationship challenge we were thinking about, although they do come in.
Yeah.
But it's a challenge to all of those relationships around your dinner table as well.
And you don't want to let your marriage be a weak spot that Satan can attack you through.
That's right. So we want to talk about that, because we found out that there are some practical things that we can do if we know that we know the situation is coming, that certain things are ahead of us, or maybe certain things are happening to us right away. There are practical things we can do and adapt to our circumstances in a way that will strengthen our marriage and not just put stress on it.
You know, who's homeschooling around here? I hear people say, well, my wife's homeschooling my children.
Right. And, you know, that, yes, we do hear that. And statistics will tell you that 94% of the instruction that goes on in homeschools, that's a real number, by the way, 94% is done by the mother. Okay. We dads, we don't do much opening up the books. Well, for one thing, I find it when I get home from work and it's 8 or 9 o'clock, my kids are not really up for phonics at that point. So it wouldn't work for me to homeschool to do that kind of part. But it's an interesting thing. If you remember Numbers 33, everybody remembers Numbers 33, right?
Of course. We don't need to discuss that with them.
Okay. In Numbers 33, the law of Moses is speaking about oaths and vows and promises and contracts and stuff. And about the first three verses or so, it's talking about men making contracts and vows before the Lord and all the rest. And it basically say, keep your vows. Okay. Well, that's pretty straightforward. We all understand that. The rest of the chapter is talking about vows that are undertaken by wives, by unmarried daughters, by betrothed women, all these other things. It goes on and on and on. And one of the things it says is that, well, if a young woman makes a contract and her father hears about it, he can cancel it. Likewise, a married woman, if she makes a contract or a vow of some sort, and her husband, when he hears of it, he has the option to cancel that contract. Now, law of Moses, we're in the age of grace, we're under Christ, not under the old Jewish law, but I find an interesting principle there, because it all came back and said, you know what, dad or father, you have an ultimate responsibility for what's going on in your home, okay? It's like the captain of the ship. He's responsible for everything that goes on in his ship. When God sets up his leadership for the church, what does he say? In 1 Timothy 3:4, one of the requirements of an elder is that he be one who rules his own house well, and having his children in submission with all reverence. You know, God expects us fathers to be in charge of our homes.
In fact, he holds fathers responsible for their homes.
So I would say, dads, you know what? Mom may be doing 94 to 110% of the instruction in your home, but it's your ship. You're the captain. You're responsible. It's not mom's homeschool. It's not your wife's project.
They had a chance to say no.
Right.
And they didn't.
Bad. That's right.
You are now a homeschooling father.
Yes. Okay. And so that's an important thing. First, I think, is for us fathers to grasp that and say, okay, I'm going to take at least the title or responsibility for this.
And so the wife is a blessing to her husband because he doesn't have to teach him spelling and math because he has a wife to do it.
That's right. If I'm responsible that my children learn how to spell and do math, and it's not really convenient for me to do it,
God has given you a helper suitable for you.
A beautiful helper.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I love the thought of my children have a real alma mater.
Yes. You know what alma mater means in Latin? It means nourishing mother. Okay.
Hail to thee, our nourishing mother. Yeah. Our children have a real alma mater.
That's good.
You know, Titus 2 says that women should be keepers at home is what many translate it. The word is oikoergos.
Right.
And the way that it's translated is different ways. Some people say busy at home, and they say, well, when you're home, be busy. And other people say, keepers at home, stay at home. Well, you know, I'm a full-time mother, but we're mostly on the road. I'm not much of a stay-at-home mother. Okay, what is that really about? Oikoergos has the sense of being a homekeeper, like a lighthouse keeper or a garden keeper. The person who's responsible for keeping the light burning, for keeping it functioning, for keeping it on track. You know, the nurturer, the one who keeps the home doing what it's supposed to do.
The one who tends things.
Who tends things and takes care of things. And I like that thought a lot when I thought about the lighthouse keeper. You think about the lighthouse keeper on sunny days is up there tending the candle and tending the oil and lamps and everything, and in the storm too. And so a wife should be a tender of her home in the same way.
Okay. Now, that has some ramifications, okay? Because if I'm responsible for what's going on in my home school, I need to take an interest in it. But there's different ways of doing that, and we need to be careful between us that we're not trying to push things off at each other.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, naturally, the wife is going to be more concerned about the practical stuff. What math curriculum do we use? Mm-hmm. What science curriculum do we use? And the dad is going to be more concerned about the philosophical part.
Right.
You know,
we're the visionary ones.
Will my children be able to get into college? Yeah. What is our goal here? What are we doing? How are we going to do it? What is our philosophy? Those are the things the men are concerned about.
That's right.
But it's got to be balanced. I remember one gentleman who... we met this couple at a new homeschoolers tea.
Yeah.
And his wife was going crazy because every night when he came home, if they didn't have every worksheet complete and graded and fixed, he just about had hysterics.
Well, see, they weren't going to be able to get into college if they didn't.
That's right. I mean, that 7-year-old and 5-year-old, my word, what will they do when Oxford University asks to see those papers?
I can tell you, Oxford University doesn't ask.
I know. We had a son that went there.
Yeah. But, you know, that was an unbalanced interest. But then...
there needs to be real interest, too. Like, I think about friends of ours.
Yes.
Who the wife was ultra-submissive. Maybe submissive in an unbalanced way.
I would say quasi-submissive.
Quasi-submissive.
Yeah.
Kind of passive-aggressive submissive.
Yeah.
Okay, because she said, I want you to make all the decisions in our family, honey. And so she said, what science curriculum do you want us to use? Now, Dad was working his behind off. They were having trials at the pharmaceutical company he was working for.
Right. And I remember that. Yes.
He did not have an opinion what science curriculum they would use.
And so his passive-aggressive, quasi-submissive wife just kind of sat back and said, well, when he tells me what science to use, I guess we'll start doing science. Hmm?
And so they didn't do science.
Yeah. You know, that wasn't much help.
No, that wasn't. She was not being a help to him.
That was an area she was not helping him. She was actually pushing back. Or I had another friend, bless his heart, godly man, loved him as a brother. But he was like me. He's a bit of a visionary. Now, I used to frighten Melanie because I would come home and I would say, well, what if we did this? Or what if we changed jobs and did that?
Whoa, we can't do that. That has lots of problems.
Yes, and she would react like that.
Because I'm outspoken.
Okay. Now,
I eventually learned to shut up.
Well, she learned to help me work these things through. And some of those ideas were stupid, and she helped me see that. Some of those ideas were good, and I helped her.
And now we're full-time speakers and writers.
That's right.
Yeah.
But my friend's wife was not the one to talk back to him in any way. And so he would come home and he'd say, you know what, I was reading an article the other day and there's a lot of houses that are available for purchase. You could just relocate them on, I mean, just move the house onto your own property out in the country. Wouldn't it be great to have a house debt-free? So they did that.
Okay, we'll do that.
And so they did that. And then he started talking about, you know, it'd be really neat if we could, like, have some chickens or something.
Okay, we'll get chickens.
Got chickens, yeah. And then somebody had told him about the benefits of grinding your own wheat.
I'll grind our wheat. Okay,
that's right.
I'll do that.
And homeschooling, because that's good for discipling your children.
We'll homeschool, yeah.
That's right. And you know what? He was an engineer and a type A personality. He liked everything to be spick and span. Even though you've got 4 children and you're living out in the country in a partially remodeled house.
With chickens.
Okay. But it's got to be orderly. And so she said, okay, we'll do that.
Okay, I'll keep the house clean.
That's right. And one day she came to him and she said, dear, I'm dying. Okay? I can't do all this. And he said, oh, maybe you need to manage your time better. I've got this really neat notebook that I use at work. And
No kidding.
Yeah, that's right.
This did not go well.
No, that was not good either because because she was not giving him feedback, maybe, he was giving her all of this burden. Every time he came up with a bright idea, she said, oh, marching orders, must implement. And did not, you know, there wasn't an interchange there going on to say, you know, dear, I'm doing an awful lot already. I've got 4 children and I'm trying to homeschool and everything.
Well, they ended up putting their children in a very inferior church school.
Yeah.
Because she couldn't manage all those burdens he put on her. And so, who's homeschooling? We're homeschooling.
We are homeschooling.
We are homeschooling. Right. And we have to share the burden, share the buck, and we're going to talk about that. You know, love and respect is an essential part of marriage. You know, the Word of God tells us that husbands should love their wives and see to it that wives respect their husbands.
That's right. It doesn't say love your wife when she's especially lovely. Okay? That's not really, you know, that's not really when we show love, right? It's like our children are really obedient when it suits them. That's not true obedience, is it? True love is when, you know, your wife is not the beautiful woman you married that day, and she's fractious and tired, and the children are out of hand, and all the rest of it. God says, love your wives. And so we're commanded to do that.
It says love is patient, right. Love is kind, love is not jealous, even of homeschooling.
That's
right. Even of the children.
Right. And this passage here, 1 Peter 3:7, to me, that is the homeschooling father's passage there. Husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. You know, that takes a lot of communication. That takes a lot of getting to know this person in a lot of different circumstances. You know, when we got married, I don't know if we talked about homeschooling. It wasn't really high on my mind. But,
no.
But, you know, as we grow and as our lives change and as we get to know each other better and better, we should be identifying these things and knowing one another. And I need to make a special study of you.
Right. And, you know, the interesting part about this is sometimes in conservative Christians, we get this a little backwards. We see submission as the foot on the neck, tyranny, and not as the loving submission that it is. You know, that the, yes, I submit to Hal as the head of our family, but he shows me honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life.
Right.
And when you have a husband willing to die for you, it's not a problem submitting to him. Especially when he understands that willing to die for you applies to the little things of life as well as the big things. You know, and so we keep the lines of communication open. You know, it's very important to communicate freely.
Right.
And specifically about our homeschooling, I need to be sharing with Hal how our homeschooling is going, what my concerns are, what my questions are. But if I don't volunteer it...
If you don't volunteer it, I need to draw it out, because you are a very well-spoken woman, and you explain things to me in a way that I can understand with my male brain. Okay?
Sometimes a little more clearly than I ought.
Well, that's okay. Sometimes I need more help. But you know, if your wife is not that kind of woman, if she's not the one to volunteer this information, you need to ask the question, Dad. You need to be drawing it out of her, because it's important that you are all on the same page with this.
Now, this is especially true with the spiritual needs of your children. Mm-hmm. Because, see, we wives are with the children all the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we can see things that our husbands can't. And so as we need to recognize their role as priests to the family and be telling them what's going on. You know what? This child of ours is particularly tender right now. You need to take them on an errand or something, talk to them, because, you know, I think they need to talk to you about their relationship with the Lord.
That's true. And, you know, this has become so much easier as everybody's gotten into the cell phone world now, because I know when we first started homeschooling, this was not really a real common thing. But now something comes up in the family, she could send me a text message to say, please pray, children are rotten, or something. And I can, you know, and I could be in a meeting, I could be on an airplane somewhere, and I'll get that message and say, oh, got to put on the cape, be the super dad here, and I'm going to pray and ask God's blessing on my family, even though I'm not right there.
And sometimes put on the super dad cape and come home.
Ooh, yeah, we have to do that sometimes. Usually only once per child, I find.
Yeah.
But,
deeply regret it. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. But you know what? A very interesting thing about this is when we take on this role of being home educators, you got to recognize we've both got needs. You've got needs. I've got needs. We have new needs coming up because now we're homeschoolers, and we got to communicate those. You know, one of the things, there's an old episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show that I love because Rob and Laura are coming home from some event, and she's giving him the cold treatment. And he says, what's the matter? And she says, you know what? We don't know. We don't read minds, okay? We've got to be communicated with, even if, all right, maybe it's obvious to you, dear wives, it ain't obvious to us. So please communicate it lovingly, respectfully.
Lovingly. You know, it says speaking the truth in love in Ephesians 4:15. It says we should speak the truth, but in love. That's the hard part.
And likewise, I need to communicate to her lovingly and respectfully and without throwing lots of guilt on your plate and stuff. Because she needs to know my needs and stuff. Because she's, you know, you're overwhelmed with this task. You have something new on your plate. Something different than we started out with.
Yeah, or maybe it's not new. I've been homeschooling 20 years, but it's still hard.
Well, okay, you go out and start a business, and that makes it all new.
That makes it new.
But
you know, the other part of love and respect is women are commanded to respect their husbands even when they don't earn it. Mm-hmm. Okay? See to it.
You're probably saying
that the
wives
respect their husbands. Hey, now. But, you know, we as wives need to be careful. It's really easy to talk to our friends and to share things that would hurt our husbands, mm-hmm. especially that the pious woman's way to gossip is to say, would you pray for us? And then share too much. Okay? Where Proverbs 31:11 was very convicting to me. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, and so he will have no lack of gain. Helen and I tell a lot of stories on our family. Because we know that we've found that stories help you to understand the point we're trying to get across and to remember it. But did you know, before we published our book, we had each of our children read it, or we read it aloud to the ones who couldn't read, and got their approval of every story about our family in that book.
And if there was anything in there that they felt embarrassed about, they didn't want their name on, we would take their name off, change the story, take it out completely, because we don't want our transparency dealing with other people to be an embarrassment to those closest to us. Likewise, in our marriage, we don't want our transparency about our marriage to be an embarrassment to each other.
And this is a real temptation because I love to tell a funny story. I love to make people laugh. And it's very easy for me to do that in a way that's denigrating to hell if I'm not careful. I have to make sure that what I'm saying would not embarrass him if he were standing there with me. Now, one thing that I've noticed that homeschool moms sometimes have a problem with is, for many of us, getting involved in homeschooling is the first time we have really seen a lot of godly men. Okay? The world is not full of godly men. I think probably the highest concentration of them is in the homeschool movement. And it's really tempting to look at those godly men and wish our husbands were like that.
Mm-hmm. I know people have asked you sometime about all the wonderful things that I must do to help in the homeschool.
Oh, it drives me crazy. Yes. They'll say, I wish my husband were like Hal. I'll say, Hal, I think Hal's great. I think he's fantastic. But I'd say, what do you mean? And they'd say, well, you know, the way he's so involved in homeschooling, I wish my husband would help in teaching our children. I say, Hal doesn't help in teaching our children. I mean, teaching the Word of God, but generally he doesn't really much help in the teaching.
No,
I say,
not much.
Really? But they have this idea of what a homeschool leader is like, and they judge their husbands by it. We need to be very careful. Yeah. And let me tell you a little secret here. This is the truth, women. Believe this. Your husband will become what you believe he can become. If you show respect and praise your husband and you respect the godly qualities in him, he will do everything within his power to live up to your expectations. And if you want your husband to become a godly, strong man of God and a leader, then you believe he can. And you praise him when he shows any sign of it. And you honor him and you respect him. Because if you respect him, he'll believe he can conquer the world. Because I tell you what, I stepped on hell when we were first married. His visionary tendencies terrified me. Because I am somebody that quickly sees to the result of something. I'm very analytical. And he'd say these things that sounded crazy to me. And I'd say, what? That's crazy. That makes no sense. What are you talking about? Stepped on him constantly. And then we went to a session. I heard somebody talking about people who were visionary and who needed to think things through out loud. And they were people who thought outside the box. And I began to stop, instead of stepping on him and panicking and thinking he was seriously proposing what we should do, to realize he was just brainstorming. And so I started saying, oh, that's interesting. So how do you think that would work out? Well, what about this issue? What about that issue? And working through it. And very quickly after that, Hal became an entrepreneur. And we wrote a book. And we started a publishing company. And it's amazing what he could do when I believed in him instead of stepped on him.
Well, you know, I come up with about 100 ideas before breakfast every morning, and 95 of them won't work, and 5 or 4 might be seriously illegal, but one of them is going to be brilliant, okay? So, yes, thank you for believing in me. You know, one of the things, too, we want to say to moms especially, you know, we get into this homeschooling network and all of those great whole earth kind of, you know, family things that we do, like nursing babies and having lots of them.
Yeah, and I'm sitting in a recliner and I've got a baby nursing and a toddler sitting between my legs on the foot of the recliner and children all around me all day long. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to feel like I don't want anybody to touch me, ever.
That does not make you feel real affectionate and cuddly at the end of the day.
No, it doesn't. It makes you want to be alone.
Yes.
And I have found it's very critical to specifically, out of love for my husband, take naps. You know, to take a time in the afternoon, put the children down. Now, my children have always been really bad at napping. I have a hard time understanding that. I love naps. Naps are wonderful. Yep. How could you not like a nap? So I'd get them into my bed, okay, and I'd read them a story, and then I would lay my arms across them, the younger ones, to keep them in place, and then go to sleep. But I found that if I took nap time, if I took a non-working lunch and spent some time online chatting with friends or reading a book, if I had a cup of tea, that I could save enough for my husband that when he came home, I could still show him love and affection. Because we live in an incredibly sensual world where there are plenty of people in our husband's workplace, out in the world, who would happily supply our place in his life. And we need to make sure that we do not deprive one another except with consent for a time that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. That's hard for homeschool moms. Sometimes we get really tired and really touched out. And yet it is critically important for your marriage that you take the time. If you need a nap, get a nap. Your husband would far rather have you take a nap than have a clean house, honestly.
Yep, I agree with that. Sure. You know, I think too, you know, we need to recognize that, you know, that verse in 1 Peter again, that our wives are not built the same way as we are. They don't have the same kind of stamina, the same sort of strength and all, especially a lot of the same emotional strength. And we need to recognize that becoming a full-time teacher in any venue is a major undertaking. And when you are homeschooling, you are just as much a teacher as that mom who goes off down the street to the local Christian school.
I think about your mom now.
Yeah, my mom was a career public school teacher, and she took some time off when me and my sister were young. And then when we both got into school, she came back. She was a librarian for the rest of her career. And I remember after mom started teaching again that she would come home in the afternoons, and she would put her book bags down, and she'd sit on the couch, and she'd go, whew. And sometimes she would still be there when Dad got home from work, you know. And I remember we ate out a lot more after that because it's tiring. And, you know, an interesting thing. You had a conversation with your aunt a few years ago who was teaching. Yes, you remember this.
Okay. Oh, I remember.
Yes, you do remember that.
Okay. You should have warned me. Yes, we were teaching, and she was just saying she was a little superior acting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she said, well, we recently started a new program in our school. I was wondering what math curriculum you use. We use something called Saxon Math. And I said, well, really? I have taught every single level of Saxon Math? Yes. And she said, you've used K-3 Saxon Math? I said, no, I've used K-3 Calculus. Most of them three or four times. And she was just stunned. Right. Because she didn't have anywhere near that level of experience using that math program that I did.
She had taught 20 children fifth grade math.
Once
over and over.
And I taught 8 children over the course of years every level of math.
Right.
And those lower levels we've taught multiple times.
You know, I think the real trap is we dads tend to think, well, you know, I go to work the same as I used to, and I come home the same as the way they used to, and whatever happens during the day, that's her to manage. But I still have expectations. And really, if your wife, instead of teaching your children, if your wife were packing up her book bags and going down the street to the Christian school, the local elementary school or whatever, spending all day teaching other people's kids, would you treat her differently at the end of the day? Would you say, wow, I had a hard day at work. How was your day at work, dear? Oh, I had a hard day at work, too. Well, you know what? I think you probably would treat him a little differently.
Why? Because she's bringing home a paycheck? Mm-hmm. Well, what's more important, a paycheck or your own children?
Well, you know, the fact of it is, it's a burden on you either way.
It really is. And, you know, I think about the kind of days. Sometimes when Hal was working outside the home, he'd been working at home for about 6 years.
Yeah.
But back when he was working outside the home, sometimes he'd come home. And he'd And Hal's so nice. You know, he's way nicer than I am. He'd come in, and the kitchen would be cold and empty. And he'd say, honey, what's for supper? Not, where in the world's supper? He'd say, honey, what's for supper? And I'd say, I want to eat out. Being the nice, wonderful man that he is, he would say, okay, where do you want me to take you? And I'd say, I want to go alone.
And I'd say, where are the children?
And I'd say, they're in the laundry room. They're waiting on you.
Okay.
You know, sometimes they just need to be sent to the principal's office.
You know, interesting thing. In our state, our homeschooling law is actually piggybacked on an existing private school law. And so when we file our paperwork with the state, we have to list our chief of instruction and our chief administrator. Well, I know who's doing the teaching, so I'm the administrator, okay? I'm the headmaster. And it really helps me a lot as a homeschool dad to kind of define my role. Because I think, you know what? I'm the headmaster of a Christian school, a small boarding school, in fact, that's so exclusive, you have to be born onto the waiting list. And it's in this caring home-like environment, and it's, you know, this is fantastic. So, you know what? I run that through my head frequently. I think, okay, I'm going to be the headmaster of a school. What do I expect? Well, I've got to set a vision. What are the goals for our school? Why does this school exist as opposed to any of the others in the community? What are we going to try to do with this? And you know what? I've got this instructor here. I need to make sure that she has proper professional development, right? Teach her in service days. We send her off for training. She goes to conventions and stuff.
Yeah, she goes to homeschool conventions.
That's right.
You know, so many dads say, oh, that's so much money. Mm-hmm. What a waste of time. But if he were the headmaster of a private school, he wouldn't be sending her to a teacher development thing in Minneapolis. He'd probably be sending her to one in Hawaii. Right? But, you know, seriously, when we see those magazines and journals as important continuing education, you know, see the conference as an opportunity to encourage the people that are teaching our children.
Well, you know what? And this is a severely litigious society. I mean, if I were running a school, I'd want to be sure I had some legal protection out there. We are lifetime members of Homeschool Legal Defense Association. You know, we always know that there's an attorney out there we can call if we have a question.
Now, a lot of dads say, oh, that's $100. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, to the wife who worries that somebody might knock on the door sometime and she wouldn't know who to call or what to do, it's really cheap. In fact, it happened to some friends of ours in our county. Their teenage daughter had a friend that she'd met at church, and that friend became angry that her mother wouldn't let her come spend the night for a party that was unsupervised. So she called social services and reported them for child abuse. And somebody knocked on the door, and they were not members of HSIDA. Her husband had decided not to do that. It took her 4 hours to find an attorney who would even talk to her, and it cost $200 for a half-hour consultation. Think about it.
Yeah, you know, and another thing, too, the head of the school is the guy who handles the PR. He's the one that does the media relations, public relations, and all sorts. Do we have public relations as homeschoolers? Now, okay. I've been a support group leader for years. I was on the board of our state organization, so I'm used to dealing with reporters.
But what about Grandma?
What about Grandma? She's not so easy to put off.
No.
No. What about the nosy next door neighbor? Oh, wow. You know,
what about those family reunions?
What about them? You know what? We found out something. We found out something in our marriage that, and understand, our family's wonderful. We love our family.
Oh, we love them to pieces.
But, okay, if they ever had a problem with either of us, they all go to her.
They call me.
Even my own mother.
Yeah.
They all go to her.
Yeah, his mother would call me and say, you know, I'm so worried Hal's going to have a heart attack. Mm-hmm. You know, have you talked to him? What is he eating? I think you need to tell him he needs to eat more healthy. You know, I think he needs to lose some weight.
Yeah, you see, that worked, didn't it? Yeah, but honestly, they dumped everything on our wives because they figure she's going to be easy to get the message to, because gosh, that husband's always such a hard-headed type, you know.
Yeah, she can be guilted.
Yes, and they will put burdens on your wife that she is really not able to bear. And so it's really, really, really good that we as the headmaster step up to the plate and say, hey, you know, Mom, Aunt Lucy, whoever it is, say, look, this is a decision we made, and I'm the head of my household. Don't harass my wife about it. She's just doing what I want her to do.
Yeah.
Okay? If you want to talk about it, I'll talk about it, but we've made a decision. So.
And even not that belligerently, but if just when that family reunion comes and everybody wants to say, but will they ever get into college and ask you the same questions? You know, they've asked you for 10 years now, so they know the answer. If instead, dad steps up and he says, you know, we made the decision to homeschool and we're pretty happy with it. You know, we appreciate your concern, but we're pretty happy with what we're doing. They'll shut up.
So that's a really good thing for dads to do. You know, another thing, and this was one of those rare moments of brilliance that came about in my life. I think God dropped something on me.
They're not rare.
No, no,
you're full of brilliance and other things.
My wife, Melanie, was starting to get into some getting into the quagmire a few years ago, because one thing we found out about homeschooling moms is they become very adept at multitasking.
They're capable.
They can do all kinds of things. And neighbors and friends notice this.
And churches.
And churches. And
homeschool organizations. And nonprofit groups.
They will often go to the homeschooling moms and say,
we'll let you lead.
Say, oh, can you help me with this project I've got? Or can you help us with this volunteer thing with the church?
The soup kitchen.
Or you're so good at organizing these things. Can you help us publicize this? And you know what? She was getting overwhelmed because it's really heady stuff for people to say, oh, you are so talented. We desperately need you. You know, that's kind of complimentary.
It's especially complimentary when, you know, sometimes being a mom is a pretty thankless job. You know, the child throws up on you all night and he's not thankful you cleaned him up.
No.
You know?
That 3-year-old never said, Mom, I know I kept you up all night. I promise, I'll just play quietly at the foot of the bed and you take a nice long nap.
No.
They never said that.
And who's ever been thanked for changing a dirty diaper? You know, it can be a thankless job in the short term. Now, I'll tell you, I've got adult children. It's not always a thankless job. You know, they will rise up and call you blessed. But when they're little, it's a thankless job. And yeah. It's very tempting to let all those outside activities give you your approval. Because they will say thank you. They'll gush all over you. And it's very tempting to neglect your family for that gushing approval. It's even tempting for some dads. We've seen dads involved in support groups and state organizations where they weren't getting much approval in their job or their home, but they found it in homeschool leadership. You got to be careful. Find your approval in Jesus Christ.
Right.
You know, what you do for him, and learn to say no.
Learn to say no, and that's hard, especially if you have the heart of a servant and you want to help people so badly. It's hard to tell them no. It's hard to disappoint people. Well, I had this thing came to me one day as she was struggling with this, and I said, Melanie, I've got an idea. You know better than I do what your workload is, whether you can spare the time or the attention, or if this is going to consume too much from you. And you can't always reach me. You know, I'm working in a paper mill somewhere, or I'm traveling and have my pager turned off or whatever. So let me just tell you this. I'm going to give you a blank check.
No swords, Katie.
Okay. Tell Joan of Arc to put her sword back up, please.
Okay.
Okay, got you. Thank you. So let me tell you, I'm going to do something for you. I'm going to give you what amounts to a blank check for the value of no.
Okay.
And what this means is if somebody comes to you and says, will you do something for me? And you know in your heart of hearts that this is a bad idea and you can't really do it in good conscience, then you can tell them from me, my husband does not want me to do this.
Now, let me tell you, that is gold in the homeschool movement, because we teach women. They should follow their husbands. They
right.
should let him be the head of the house. So if somebody asks me to do something, I say, I'm so sorry. I'd love to. But you see, Hal doesn't want me to do that.
Uh-huh.
They're like, oh, okay.
Right.
I'll ask somebody else.
And I'm going to trust you enough to say that if you ever have to use that, then I will back you up. Whatever it is, if you had to say no on that basis, I will back you up.
And that's when I began to learn to start putting our own family first, to think what is best for my children, what is best for my husband, what is best for my family. Before, and you know, we give and we are servants, and how about take her out of here? Just lift her up, take her out the back doors, let her yell at the hockey players.
And right. I'm sure they'll appreciate it.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's so spoiled. She has 6 big brothers and 1 big sister. And you know, I say no as often as I can to her, but they say yes all too much.
Okay.
You know, it's a similar issue to the right tool.
That's true. You know, one thing I found out about homeschooling moms is that You put frugal on there. I would have said cheap. But homeschool moms, economical, we'll say that. Economical. Homeschool moms are very good at saving money, cutting corners, squeezing the pennies, and all the rest of it.
Till it screams.
That's right.
Yeah.
And how many times have we seen a homeschool mom who has bought a curriculum because her friend used it or it was recommended, and it just doesn't work?
It was the wrong thing for her child's learning style or their family or the time she had, but she keeps using it till the end of the year. And maybe she uses it with all her children.
And she said, you know what, we spent $110 on that, and I cannot afford to waste.
Now, let me ask you something. When you're doing a job around the house, you're working on the car, or you're changing out the toilet, or changing the worst job of all, changing the fixtures in the shower, okay? If, you've never done that, I advise you don't, okay? There's just so many things that can go wrong. You can be without a shower for a very long time. Yeah, that's one of those. Yeah, we judge the hardness of jobs by how many trips to Lowe's it takes.
That one, we lost count on that one.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Okay, when you have the wrong tool, and you have got, this happened to us the other day. The boys were changing out an alternator, and they did not have the right wrench. Now, when you don't have the right wrench, do you keep banging on it till it becomes the right wrench?
No. You know what? I'm like the rest of you. If I've got an opportunity to go buy a tool with good conscience, and if I can't find the tool that I already own, I'll go buy a different one that's like it, so I've got different tools. Okay. You know what? The curriculum, the materials, all of that other stuff, those are your wife's work tools. She's doing the job you want her to do, right, Ed? She's teaching your children. And you know what? We need to give them permission. We need to grab them sometimes and say lovingly, dear, this is not working. Go buy something new. Sell the other one. Put it on eBay, Craigslist. Give it to somebody.
And you can even justify this with the word God.
Yeah.
Mary Pride pointed this out to me, and I was so thrilled to hear it. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding.
That's right.
When you go out to buy things, make sure you're buying things that increase the wisdom in your home. It sounds like homeschool stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good thing. You know, I had another illustration, too, that came up one time. This was so interesting. It's not just the curriculum. We were doing some little minor redecorating in the house. I was putting in a tile floor in our kitchen, and we were going to put in laminate flooring through the family room, which is also our school room. And Melanie said, well, look, since we've already got the floor torn up here, can we repaint? Because we had this really bad wallpaper in there when we bought the house. So she said, can we repaint it? So,
yeah,
sure,
it was straw, and it would have been, I'm sure it was lovely when they put it up 30 years ago, but it really looked decrepit at this point.
That's true. So I said, sure, it makes perfect sense. So we picked out a trendy color that year. It was a sage green, and we thought, man, this is going to look good. It looks so good on the...
It was very conservative, and so...
Yeah, it was great. So we went, and we wanted to do this right, so we bought good paint, expensive paint. We bought good, expensive paint. And so I'm working in the kitchen this weekend. She's working in the den, and she gets done, and I walk in to see how it's looking. She's standing there looking around, not happily.
I said, I hate it. It makes me feel sick. Because, see, this beautiful sage green with sparkling white trim was gorgeous. But, see, we didn't have sparkling white trim in that room. We had dark walnut stain.
Yes, it looked like a schoolhouse from 1930.
It looked like Aunt Mabel's house that hadn't been redone since 1930.
It was depression green.
It was disgusting.
It was awful.
It was depressing.
And
it was vomit green.
It was bad. And I looked at her, and she looked very unhappy. And I said, dear, you don't like this, do you?
No, I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
And, you know, a good, frugal husband can say, well, you know, this is really good quality paint. We need to kind of live with it for a while. I'm
20
sure
years,
to it.
20 year warranty.
Yeah, 20 years. We need to live with this for a little while. But I thought, you know, maybe I need to step in here. I said, dear, why, this is where you work. This is where you spend all day with the children. This is your major area of the house.
But we spent so much money on it.
Okay. But if you could repaint it, would you like to do that?
Well, yeah.
Okay. What color would you like to repaint it, dear? Go ahead. It's all right. What color do you want to paint it?
Red.
Red.
Yeah.
Okay, then let me tell you, I'm an off-white kind of guy.
These walls really like are a little exciting for Hal.
These walls are a bit exotic for me. I like it neutral, okay? And she's, you wanted red.
Tibetan red.
Tibetan red, okay. Yeah. And I said, okay. This is her room, and I told her she could do it. Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so.
So she went back to Sherwin-Williams, and she came home with the paint. And I'm back in the tiles, working in the kitchen again. And I hear her going with the roller. You know, that one. And then I hear her talking. She's talking to the paint.
I love it.
She's saying,
I love it.
And she said, it's I love beautiful. This. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. Yes. And so I finally, I got to see this. And I walk in, and son of a gun, it's like walking into a can of V8. It is the color of tomato soup. And she's glowing. She loves it.
I love it. It gave me energy. It gave me joy. And it made me feel the love of my husband.
And we still have a tomato soup colored room in our
house. And every time I see it, I think about your love for me.
You know, that was cheap at the price, guys. Every time she walks in the den, she says, my husband loves me. That was a good investment.
Yes, I feel affectionate.
So, you know, think about these things. There's long-term implications to these decisions.
You know, submission has gotten a bad vibe in our culture. And yet in the homeschool movement, we don't seem to understand it very well either. The Word of God says that wives should submit to their husbands. It does not say wives should submit to every man. It says that wives should submit to their husbands. And it was hard for me to figure out submission. I am a type A personality. I am a leader. I am a lead, follow, or get out of the way or I'll run over you kind of person.
Right.
Okay? And so when we got married, I was very determined to submit to Hal. And it took me a while to figure out that, you know, Hal really did not want to decide what color bath mats we had.
No, I think I finally told her, look, dear, you know, you're supposed to be my helper. And asking me to choose bath mats is not help. This is not helping me at all. Okay.
But there is a restfulness in submission. Because, see, when things worry me, homeschool moms can just about have a nervous breakdown over changing spelling curriculum. You know, because we're so worried that we make the right decision for our children, just like their future happiness in their marriage is going to be determined by what grammar they used in the fourth grade. You know what? I had bad grammar teachers, still became a writer. It's okay, folks.
You can get over it. Yeah.
But when we can kick those things that worry us up the chain of command and say, you know, I am really worried about this decision. How can you help me with this?
Mm-hmm.
And discuss it with him. Lots of times he doesn't have any idea what I'm talking about. But he can discuss the philosophies. He can discuss our time commitment. He can help me figure it out and make that decision. And I can trust the Lord to lead through him. And I'm not going to tell you. I can tell you story after story of how making a decision I thought was crazy and the Lord using it to our great benefit and to his glory. But there's a restfulness in submission. There's a restfulness in knowing that the final decision does not rest with me. I think I'm pretty competent. I like being competent. But I worry. I can't sleep at night. I worry all night. And then the other night I was worried about something and I thought, hang on, Hal's the head of the family. He's the one responsible for this. I need to let him deal with it. He never has trouble sleeping. I need to let him deal with it and trust the Lord to lead us through him.
And I can tell you what, anybody that has a book table at a convention can tell you, the mothers come up and they look and they agonize and they think and they worry and they go away and then they come back and they think. And, you know, eventually they'll come up with their husband and they'll say, and the husband will say, sure, get to him. And they go and say, wow, okay, that's easy. You know, you can be a help to your wives by helping her gain a little bit of perspective, a little bit of encouragement there, and allowing you to submit in a way that is good for you and for the family.
That's right.
Yes. Oh, now I remember this conversation we had when I was the new president of our homeschool organization in the state, and we're coming home from our first convention since my inauguration, and I'm thinking, okay, I want to do something really good and forward thinking. And I'm asking her, I said, you know, I'd like to do something to really focus on what people feel a need for. What I mean, like, you know, are moms concerned about teaching high school science? Is that the biggest issue? Or is it, you know, like math? Or are they worried about the special needs? What do you think is the biggest concern of the homeschooling mother that we can help address? And you said, you gave me a face like that, yeah. And you said,
help! It's the house, Hal.
It's the house.
The biggest stress of a homeschool mom is the house.
Hmm.
It is impossible to keep a clean house, perfect house, when you're homeschooling. Hang it up. Perfection is no longer possible.
Well, I mean, think about it. Before that time, you put the children on the big yellow bus, and they go away, and you've got 6 or 7 hours to clean things, and then they come back, and they've only got 2 or 3 hours of the day where they can destroy the world. And so it's easy to keep caught up.
Or even if you have little ones, you know, they nap and you clean when they nap.
Yeah.
Or you're watching them. But now suddenly you're teaching the oldest and the little ones are tearing things up.
And they're there all day long.
They're there all day long. You know, where there are no oxen, the manger is clean. But abundant crops come by the strength of the ox.
Oh, so in other words, there's useful stuff going on that means you're not going to be able to keep everything quite as orderly as you used to.
It really is. You know, we've got to realize, both of us have to focus on what's important. You know, I need to find out what is it that really bothers Hal about the house.
Mm.
You know, if he's bothered by the house, usually it's one thing.
Oh, right. Like, you know, you may be a father who says, you know what, we're going to figure things out, but gosh, it is crucially important to me that I have all of the clean underwear that I need every single day in my drawer, okay? That laundry, I've got to have my laundry done.
And if you don't understand why he's saying that, you probably haven't been homeschooling very long.
Right.
Or it may be that you want supper on the table when you walk in the door, and you're hungry and you're irritable, and that is where the rubber meets the road. Usually, it's one thing. It's one thing that really he needs. We wives need to find out what's important to our husbands and make sure that one thing happens, even if the rest of the house looks like a tornado hit it. In fact, I joke that if someone broke into my house, I don't worry about people breaking into our house when we're gone, even when we're gone 3 weeks like this. Because if someone opened the door to my house, I'd say, oh, this one's been ransacked already. Shut the door and leave.
Yeah. And, you know, ultimately, I come back to this thing that all this stuff going on in my home is ultimately my responsibility. And praise God, I've got such a wonderful, competent wife to take care of most of that stuff.
Because you're remembering what's important, that the children are being discipled.
Right.
That they're learning to serve God, that they're being educated.
Right. But if it's my responsibility, I think about that sometimes, you know, like if one of my children fails to do a chore or doesn't quite complete it, I look around and think, you know what? This is my job. He needs to do it. He needs to learn better. I need to work with him. But ultimately, I've got to make this happen. And you know what? If I've asked you now to become a full-time teacher in our own home, and you can't spend as much time doing laundry or cooking or vacuuming or whatever else you did during the day, it's my house. It's my home. Maybe I can help. Maybe I can help. You know, it's an interesting thing. We had she was taken to task by a friend of ours who has several daughters, didn't have any sons. And she said, oh, I cannot believe that you would expect your sons to do housework.
Six boys.
Yeah.
I couldn't do all the laundry and the dishes if I started when I woke up in the morning and didn't go to finish till I went to bed.
That's right. So, you know what? We got to looking at it, thinking about it, and realized, you know what? There's nothing unmanly about cooking.
In fact, I came to Hal and I said, Hal, is this valid criticism?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, honey, why do you think they call sailors swabbies? Because they're always mopping the deck. They can mop your floors, too.
Of course, you know, you watch all the Western films, and those cowboys, manly types, they ride out on the range the first night. They look around and say, forgot to bring any women folk. Guess we go hungry. No, they got a chuck wagon. They got a cook that goes out there, okay? We can take care of these things, and we don't expect angels to sing when we roll up the cord on the vacuum cleaner, do we? Really? Do we? But, you know, just this attitude that it's not, this is her stuff, and then that stuff out there is my stuff, and I wish she'd get her act together. Rather, this is our stuff.
Our stuff.
This is our home, our family, our home school, and we're all going to work together to make it happen, even if that means I fold some laundry.
Even if that means that I help you out with the business stuff, and I do our accounting, and I help you, because the goal is that we serve God together and we accomplish the mission that God has for us.
Right.
And then when we see it as our family, our household, our homeschool, things change. You know, we've got to move back to the foundations.
We need to really think about what this whole marriage thing is about. We talk about establishing a vision for a homeschool, but remember, why do we have a marriage to start with? It's not good that a man should be alone, God said. Amen to that. It's not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper comparable to him, is what God said. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. We've got all these children now. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion. You know, all of these things are built into this marriage that God has given us, that we need helpers. We've got helpers. God intends for us to have children. We're all homeschoolers here. We have children, right? We are being fruitful, multiplying, and we are filling the earth with them to subdue it, teaching them to exercise dominion as we pass on from the scene. And, as it says in Ephesians 5, each of us in particular should so love his own wife as himself, and the wife should respect the husband.
You know, our culture sees the time of childbearing as a brief, tough time that you get through as quickly as possible so that you can begin to live your own life again. Mm-hmm. So that you can drive around the country in an RV or take cruises and enjoy the empty nest, is what it talks about. But that's not God's perspective at all. These two verses really spoke to me. Take to heart all the words by which I'm warning you today, that you may command them to your children, that they may be careful to do all the words of this law. For it is no empty word for you, but your very life. This time of teaching our children, this time of having children in our homes, of raising them up to serve God, of discipling them, is not an interruption in our marriage. It is not something to drive us apart until we can get rid of them and come back together. But instead, this is goes to the very root and purpose of our marriage. God said, why did I give the two to each other, that they may bear me godly seed? And when we see this, that this time of teaching our children is our very life. So enjoy it.
Hello, this is Hal Young. If you found this workshop encouraging and helpful, you may enjoy our book, My Beloved and My Friend, How to Be Married to Your Best Friend Without Changing Spouses, by Hal and Melanie Young. You can read a sample chapter and find more information at the website, www.mybelovedandmyfriend.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.